Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The people of Haiti, especially the people of the capital of Port-au-Prince, have been living an earthquake nightmare this week. Bob Poff is Disaster Services Director for the Salvation Army. He was in Port-au-Prince when the big quake struck on Tuesday afternoon.
I watched the buildings pancake down one on top of another. It was absolutely the most horrific thing I've ever seen.
Even the presidential palace came down. Haitian President René Préval told CNN he had nowhere to sleep, but much to do.
I have plenty of time to look for a bed. But now I am working how to rescue the people.
This hour On Point, we're looking at the earthquake and the tough aftermath and relief efforts in Haiti. And we are opening our phone lines to you. Do you have family or friends in Haiti? Have you gotten through on the phone, online? What are you hearing from Haiti? What's the best way for the world to help? Let us hear from you at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Phone lines and cell towers are down across Haiti. People are getting through, but intermittently we've got a lot of lines out, and we'll bring you voices from Haiti as we get them in this hour. We begin in Haiti with longtime NPR reporter, now CNN correspondent, Ivan Watson. He arrived in Haiti yesterday morning. Ivan, thank you very much for being with us. Where are you right now?
Tom, I'm at the rubble of what was a center for disarmament in Port-au-Prince. The building collapsed, and an informal rescue committee, they just pulled out two survivors from within the rubble just minutes ago. And, of course, this is, you know, 48 hours after the earthquake. And I just have to say, it is just overwhelming to travel through this city. You see so many incredible scenes of people trying to survive, of suffering, of despair. It's almost hard to kind of interpret at this point. Moments ago, we were at another house where two young French girls were trapped under the rubble of a house, and there was one lone French fireman who had dug a small tunnel. He could reach, he could touch their hands and pass them water. He was working with a hacksaw. These are just things you stumble across on every lane, every street, and there does not seem to be any coordinated effort to try to pull out the survivors who are still trapped, the victims who have been out who are severely wounded, and I'm not even talking of
every. Ivan Watson, breaking up there a little bit from Haiti. Do you see any signs of relief efforts in the streets yet, Ivan? Good heavens, you can hear just how rough that connection is and just how despairing. Ivan Watson, who has seen a lot, is looking at what is right there in front of him in the streets of Haiti. Search and rescue workers, such as available, have been trying, but it seems just a drop in the bucket so far compared to the need. Here's some tape from Haiti of workers working to save a survivor from one crumbled cement building of the many thousands after the earthquake there.
We need more people down here.
We need more people down here. We'll talk about what the rescue effort looks like with the head of the UN effort for relief to Haiti with me right now in the studio, and we will get as close to Haiti as we can in this hour, and we hope you'll help us do that at 800-423-8255. But with me here is Ophelia Dahl. She's executive director of Partners in Health. It's a Boston-based nonprofit healthcare organization co-founded with by Paul Farmer. Paul Farmer has done extensive work in Haiti. Ophelia Dahl has spent a lot of time, been in Haiti for many years. Ophelia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You hear Ivan Watson there, and it's just one of the reports coming out of Haiti. I mean, it sounds like absolute sort of, I hate to say it, but it's just scenes from hell there right now. The devastation there, the relief really not there yet.
The relief is not there yet. It's been more than 36 hours since the the catastrophe, and certainly we've had reports out from very shortly after it happened. We have many colleagues there, both Haitian and some expats who are there, and they have been getting reports to us to say that the devastation is as bad as ever.
The Red Cross now reporting there could be between 45 and 50,000 dead, with another 3 million people hurt or homeless. I mean, these numbers are just kind of overwhelming. I can't think of anything in any recent years of a disaster. I guess you go back to the tsunami, but even there, where the numbers are this high.
Yes, and the difference was that that in this case, the capital city has been affected, and many of the major institutions that would normally help have been decapitated, including airport, government, and UN, of course.
I mean, we've got the presidential palace down, the parliament down, build tax centers, hospitals, cathedral down across the board, and that is very, very tough to deal with. Let's get some more sound from Port-au-Prince. Here, survivors in the street in Port-au-Prince in the aftermath of the quake. I mean, it's just suffering. We hear about a lot of relief lining up, trying to get in, but that itself is not easy to do. Now, the main runway in Port-au-Prince seems to be operating, but that's a pretty skinny lifeline for a country of 9 million.
It's a skinny lifeline indeed. We have heard that relief planes are lining up. The port is completely destroyed, so ships are going to have a hard time, but I hear that they're trying to rebuild that. And the main airport is operating. The planes are getting in, but there is no control tower, so it's somewhat perilous, and I believe that they're trying to get that up today.
And what are you hearing from your staff in Haiti? Can you contact them? Can you talk to them?
Yes.
By telephone, by sat phone, by internet connection?
Yes, Partners in Health is mostly based out of the city.
Outside
Port-au-Prince. Mm-hmm. So we've actually, I believe, are some of the only clinics and hospitals that are up and running. We're operating in over 10 of those that spread across about a third of the country. We have been able to get at least one big supply truck down loaded with supplies. The first day, one of our colleagues actually from Boston, Dr. Louise Ivers, was in Port-au-Prince when it happened, managed to get to a log base. But her first message to me was, Port-au-Prince is devastated, lots of deaths, collapsed building, SOS, SOS, phones down, temporary field hospital by us, need supplies, pain meds, bandages, please help us. There are no supplies there.
No supplies. Here's a report from a survivor coming into Miami just hours after the quake.
It was a big shake. I mean, we actually thought it was something that hit the building, but it turned out it was an earthquake, and it was only after the event that we realized that it was an earthquake.
A big shake indeed. Ophelia, you know this terrain well, Port-au-Prince and beyond. Why such great devastation? I mean, maybe it's a stupid question. It's a poor country. We don't have the highest construction standards necessarily. But, I mean, just building after building, including with the UN,
yeah.
I mean, what, 100-plus people, they still can't find it, even out of the Montana Hotel, one of the sort of more premier addresses in the country.
Yes, indeed. My sense is that any country, I mean, this is a big quake. This quake would have done some damage in any city. But to have a place like Port-au-Prince that's so densely populated and the buildings, are not as well constructed. Last year we heard reports of a school that was destroyed from heavy rains in the hills of Port-au-Prince.
Just so by rain, let alone a quake.
By heavy rain. So, and you know, we all remember and the hurricanes last year too.
And they just keep coming through. Lots of people responding, and we're eager to hear from listeners, you, from what you've heard from Haiti, from relatives, from friends, from relief workers there now. And, of course, Americans already coming together to raise money to try and help from this country. Let's go to Priscilla in Middletown, Massachusetts. Priscilla, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I own an ice cream store in Middletown, Connecticut, and am next door to what's called Haiti's Back Porch, which is an art. It's artisans from Haiti. They make their handcrafts, and it's through Haitian ministries that they sell these items.
So you've got a connection to the country. What are you doing or seeing or thinking now, Priscilla?
Well, what I'm doing is, since I own an ice cream store, I'm holding a benefit on Saturday and giving a portion of all that comes in back to Haitian relief. And in this economy, I can't take huge sums out of my pocket. But this is one thing I can do to try to help.
There's a little bit happening right there, trying to raise money in an ice cream store, and good for you. I hope it works. Let's get another call. Thank you, Priscilla. Michael in Nashville. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
I have noticed, I don't get to listen a lot to the news, only what I get to listen to in the truck while I'm at work, but I've noticed I've not heard anything about the Dominican Republic, and considering that it's one landmass, I'm curious, did they also suffer large amounts of damage, and whether they did or didn't, are they willing or able to lend aid to Haiti?
It's a good question. Of course, they share the island there. We're going to talk with a seismologist later in the hour about exactly what happened. I know some people are flying into the Dominican Republic and driving the 6 hours over to Port-au-Prince, but they seem to have escaped damage pretty much, right, Ophelia?
They have. It seems that most of the damage was done in this, it was located around the major city of Port-au-Prince, but some in the south, but it didn't seem to go west and cause any major damage. Certainly, as far away as the Central Plateau where we are, which is approximately 100 kilometers from Port-au-Prince, we felt the major shakes, but didn't destroy buildings. So we're close to the Dominican border, so I imagine that some of them felt some of the shakes, but didn't cause any destruction.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking today about earthquake and its aftermath and relief efforts in Haiti. Absolute devastation, more or less, starting just outside Port-au-Prince. 3 million out of the country's 9 million in big trouble. 40,000 or 50,000 dead, the Red Cross is saying today. President Obama spoke yesterday about the extent of damage in Haiti.
The reports and images that we've seen of collapsed hospitals, crumbled homes, and men and women carrying their injured neighbors through the streets are truly heart-wrenching. Indeed, for a country and a people who are no strangers to hardship and suffering, this tragedy seems especially cruel and incomprehensible.
Yes, it does. And today, the president talking about America's support for Haiti in the aftermath of the quake.
To the people of Haiti, we say clearly and with conviction, you will not be forsaken. You will not be forgotten. In this, your hour of greatest need, America stands with you. The world stands with you. We know that you are a strong and resilient people. You have endured a history of slavery and struggle, of natural disaster and recovery. And through it all, your spirit has been unbroken and your faith has been unwavering. So today, you must know that help is arriving. Much, much more help is on the way.
The President Obama promising much to Haiti. Ophelia Dahl of Partners in Health is with me in the studio. We heard from Ivan Watson, now long of NPR, now with CNN, in Haiti itself. Let's get a call right here from Naples, Florida. Will, you're on the air, Will.
Hey, how you doing today?
Okay.
Good. Yeah, I'm really concerned about my brother in Haiti. His name is Phil Brave, and he lived there in that city of Corfu. I'm really concerned about his well-being, and I don't know if he's okay or not. So his name is Phil Brave, and I'd like to get a hold of him if possible. But if anybody knows anything, perhaps they can share it on the radio, perhaps.
Absolutely. Will's brother is Phil Brave. Have you been trying to call him? Can you normally get in touch with him, Will, when you need to?
Yes, we have talked recently. At least I think it was 2 weeks ago. Actually, it was like a week and a half ago we talked before this happened, and hey, I'm here in Naples. I have no idea if he's okay now. I'm really concerned about him.
What, have you been watching the television, Will? What do you see in the images there?
Well, the images are very, very, horrible. And, seeing something like this, what happened to children and even grown-ups, older ones, it's really, like I said, man, it's really hard. It really hurts your heart, and you wonder, if your family okay. Talk about the number of people missing. Is your family included in that number? And it's pretty, as they've been mentioning, catastrophic to see these things are happening like this. But I wonder if Phil's out there. Maybe someone will let me know But
Will is looking for his brother, Phil Bray. Stick with us, Will. Ophelia, you can hear it. This is one example of what's repeated hundreds of thousands, millions of times.
Yes, and Will, hold on, because there's a lot of people who aren't able to get messages out, and so you may yet hear from him. There is a website that you can contact, get in touch with, and that is for missing people, so that people can try to locate their loved ones. We will put that website up on Partners in Health's website. That's PIH.
What's it called?
I'm having trouble recalling the name of the website, but I have had emails saying that if you're looking for missing relatives, there is a website to log into. We will put it on to Partners in Health's website, PIH.org, so that you can log into it, Will.
Will, there's one place to look. We'll get it up at onpointradio.org as well, and we wish you luck, Will. Thank you very much for calling from Florida. Let's get another call. Corinth, Vermont. Jack, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to let the listeners know that there is a hospital that survived the earthquake 70 miles north of Port-au-Prince in a town called Limbe. It's the Good Samaritan Hospital. And they're expecting refugees to be coming north because a lot of the hospitals in Port-au-Prince were destroyed. And if people want to give money to an intact organization, it's been there for 50 years, it used to be a Baptist mission hospital, you can go to hbslimbe.org. And donate money to help that organization.
HBSLimbe.org. Have you worked there yourself, Jack, in that location?
I worked there 50 years ago as a lab technician with Dr. Bill Hodges, who was the founder of the hospital.
And what do you see in these images out of Haiti now, Jack, with your experience there?
Well, I mean, Haiti was a very suffering country before the earthquake. It's just inhuman to think how this destruction could be added to such misery that was already there.
When you speak of refugees probably headed out of the city looking for medical care, I presume that means on foot, given what we've seen in the streets?
I would guess so. 70 miles up, you know, in the United States is an hour's drive, but in Haiti, it's about a six-hour drive in the best of weather. God only knows what the earthquake did to the highways, but this and Partners in Health and the Albert Schweitzer Hospital are north of Port-au-Prince, and hopefully they'll have enough medical people to begin to treat some of the wounded.
Jack, thank you very much for that word and for your insight right there. Ophelia, you've got things spread around Haiti that people are probably going to have to try to get to. Port-au-Prince looks flattened.
They're already swarming in. In fact, we've had reports of, some of the interested, the injuries, most of them are very complicated fractures. So, to think about people getting to these places, we have heard that there are people arriving on tap-taps, the public transportation, and getting to the hospitals. But we are swamped in the Belvedere region and the other regions.
Let's get a sense of the global relief effort. We're joined right now from New York by Sir John Holmes. He's Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs at the United Nations and Emergency Relief Coordinator for Haiti. John Holmes, thank you very much for being with us. How would you characterize the state of relief at this point in the aftermath of the quake, sir?
Well, clearly it's a huge event, and we need a huge relief operation, and we're still in the very early stages of that. The focus for the moment is obviously on search and rescue, trying to find people alive under the rubble, and you're well aware that every hour counts for that. Search and rescue teams, some have arrived, many more will be arriving, so we need to give priority to that. And also, I think, to medical help. There's obviously a huge problem with the hospitals, many of which have been damaged or destroyed, and the medical infrastructure has been overwhelmed by the number of injured. So getting more doctors, field hospitals, supplies in there is a huge priority. After that, we'll need to get into the usual things of, we're already starting, obviously, of food, water, emergency shelter, because many people have got no home to go to anymore. That will take a little bit more time to arrive. Some relief has started to arrive. We had some stocks on the ground. But inevitably, it simply takes time to get people there, particularly in the particularly chaotic circumstances we're seeing in Port-au-Prince at the moment, to get the right material there. But it's starting to arrive, but it will be a huge task. I want to warn everybody about that.
Give us a sense of the scale of this relative to other disasters that the world has confronted, John Holmes.
Well, I don't want to establish league tables of disasters. I mean, people have compared it to the tsunami. I'm not sure that's quite right. We had a massive earthquake about the same time as a tsunami in North Pakistan. That was a very huge problem. I think 75,000 people were killed in that earthquake. So maybe it's something comparable to that. But, of course, we don't have any good figures for the death toll. We may not have them for days or even weeks of any reliability, but we know it's very high and probably in the thousands. I think we can say that with a degree of confidence. But in any case, it's a major emergency, a major humanitarian crisis, and we are straining every nerve to respond to it. What's encouraging, I think, is that the international community is clearly seeing it as such and is beginning to respond in terms of money, in terms of materials arriving, and planes arriving. So we're beginning to see the response that the people of Haiti so desperately need.
We've seen a flight even coming in from as far away as China. Where do you expect most of the people and materiel for this relief effort to originate?
Well, I think it will be from all over the world. I mean, clearly the U.S. will play an enormous role here. They have very big assets, very close links to Haiti, and are determined to play a big role, and we welcome that. Otherwise, there will be a lot of help from the surrounding countries in Latin America, a lot of help from Europe, as always, because they have very generous donors there, and they're beginning to fly in planes and offer money. And Canada, too, of course, with close links with Haiti. But as I say, I think the response will be truly global, because this is one of those events which has captured the global imagination, if I can put it that way, captured the global heart. So I think we will see a major response.
And finally, what about the UN staff in Haiti? Reports of scores, over 100 maybe, missing? Is that still the case? How many have been lost?
It's still the case. I think we already know of over 20 UN staff or UN peacekeepers and police that have been killed. But there's a large number of civilian staff still unaccounted for, maybe as many as 150 still, with many of those under the rubble of the main UN peacekeeping mission headquarters, which collapsed almost completely, and also one other building which we were occupying, which also collapsed. So I'm afraid that the death toll here will be extremely high too, and it's a very, very worrying situation for the UN and possibly the biggest single loss we've ever seen.
Well, amid all the losses in Haiti right now, we're sorry for that one. Sir John Holmes, heading up the UN's relief effort globally, and now for Haiti, thank you very much for joining us from New York.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Here's Hillary Clinton, thank you, Secretary of State on NBC's Today Show, saying the U.S. is helping Haiti's President, René Préval, reestablish government operations.
He is working closely with those members of his government that can be located and communicated with. We have brought in communications systems to try to create some means for the government to function.
Some means for the government to function. Carol Rosenberg joins us now from Miami, correspondent for the Miami Herald. She's part of the team there that's been reporting on the quake, joined us yesterday and again today. Carol, thank you for being here.
Hi there, Tom.
So what's your sense of the state of the U.S. Relief effort? We hear that they've got, President Obama is saying Coast Guard cutters and the 82nd Airborne and a Marine Expeditionary Unit, what, aircraft carrier and the hospital ship Comfort. Is all that on its way, Carol?
What we know from our people on the ground is that the military and the aid haven't gotten there in a meaningful way, that the Southern Command and the Pentagon have spent the last 24 hours, understandably, surveying the scene and creating a plan, and that they are going to be in stages sending this aid and figuring out whether it's going to be soldiers on the ground and Marines on the ground to distribute aid, whether they're going to be forces on the ground keeping the peace. There is an aircraft carrier heading that way. They have managed to send in some U.S. Coast Guard aircraft to remove wounded Americans four to Guantanamo Bay, and a couple of flights of Americans left the Port-au-Prince airport yesterday in Coast Guard aircraft. And we know this because our reporters who are in Port-au-Prince watched them leave. On one end of the tarmac, you had U.S. Coast Guard aircraft evacuating wounded Americans. On another, the Venezuelan Air Force had brought in some cargo planes, and they were dropping off food and water and medical supplies. And right now, I think it's that the Haitians are basically in a do-it-yourself, survive by, sheer guts and desperation mode. We have reporters who are telling us that there's makeshift morgues in churches. They're watching individuals, rescue workers, neighbors, pull people out of buildings. And frankly, one of the big questions is how many have died, how many have perished in this thing, and it is unknowable. But what individuals on the ground are doing, as we've documented at the Miami Herald, is that they are pulling identification cards off the corpses and trying to collect them up, because someday they think they're going to have to log who died, how many, to try and find numbers for this.
I'm
sorry, Tom.
Well, just do-it-yourself relief and makeshift morgues. It sounds pretty rough when everything is so destroyed. Are you suggesting, Carol, that relief is slow in coming, or is it just that, you know, that's what it takes to turn around and get more in there?
Well, I mean, the military said, understandably, that they want a plan. They don't want to be throwing people haphazardly at it. And so yesterday, like I said, there were surveillance flights. The first group of USAID and 60 members of the military got into Port-au-Prince, and this morning were out on the streets figuring it out. I mean, Haiti's a chaotic place. As we said yesterday, the institutions of civil society in some regards imploded. The church leader's gone. The UN leader, UN chief envoy, is missing in the rubble. The president said, you know, he's been surveilling the scenes. But when the military goes in, they have to go in and figure out how to be helpful, and they just haven't done that yet. We'll see. The first, I believe, maybe 100 forces of airborne going in later today, but. In terms of massive numbers of U.S. military aid, it's going to have to trickle before it flows in a big way.
Trickle is a rough word to hear, given the scale of the problem, but that may be exactly where we're at. Carol Rosenberg, I know how much you've got going on there. We appreciate your joining us in the Miami Herald today, Carol.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Rudy, in Salt Lake City, Utah, you're on the air, Rudy.
Hello. I'm calling to say that I have... talked to my siblings in Haiti. They're okay, but our neighbors' houses, like all houses around where I used to live in Haiti, they all have fallen down. There are no people under them. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
My sister owns a small grocery store. She told me this morning that she's using everything to feed everybody in the neighborhood, but surely that will not last long. And I have a nephew and a bunch of cousins who are missing. They live in Leogan, which is kind of southwest of the capital. There are a lot of damages around there as well.
Rudy, what do you think, given how much damage there is to all the infrastructure, what are the survivors up against now, even if they're not injured?
I mean, I can't even begin to imagine. I visited Haiti September of 2008, and life in a regular day when there's no earthquake is hard, and just see all those people right now who are homeless, and my family, our house did withstand the earthquake with only a small crack, but they're all afraid to go back inside.
Yeah.
And I know there's a bunch of people in my neighborhood, close to 2,000 people who are now homeless, and I have no clue what they're going to do.
Even those with homes, in effect homeless, if afraid to go back inside. Rudy, thank you very much, and good luck to your family there. Ophelia Dahl, I mean, here it is, even the survivors. The food, water,
yes.
Basics, not there.
Yeah, not there. And we're hearing reports that the situation now with very, very little water, no food, so that those people who are already sick will, or not even sick, but there will be many, many more deaths compounding this because of lack of food and water. Also, there will be the inevitable disease that comes because of people drinking water that isn't safe and everything else. This will be a tragedy that will echo for a long time.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about earthquake and aftermath and relief efforts in Haiti. Ophelia Dahl with Partners in Health is with me in the studio. They've got a lot of people down there in the thick of it. Of course, many suffering there right now, many dead. Want to understand a little bit about what happened here. Paul Earle joins us from Golden, Colorado. He's a seismologist at the U.S. Geographical Survey. Mr. Earle, thank you for being here. What happened in Haiti?
Well, as everyone knows, there was a massive earthquake, a magnitude 7 earthquake, and this earthquake was caused by the building up of stresses because of the relative motion between the Caribbean plate and the North American plate.
Now, it's been, I'm reading here, since the late 1700s, since they've seen a quake of this size. That's a long time.
Yes, that is a long time as far as people are concerned, and then it was the last last major earthquake that was in the immediate area was in 1770. That also destroyed Port-au-Prince, but in geologic time, 200 years is not that long, and it is actually what we'd expect for the repeat time of an earthquake this large. In other words, as I mentioned, those plates are moving by each other at a rate of about 7 millimeters per year. So it takes about 200 years to build up enough stress to cause an earthquake this large.
Where do these fault lines lie, Paul Earle, the Caribbean plate and the North American plate? How does that travel? Can you trace it? Is it like the San Andreas Fault where you know where its path of tension lies?
Yes. In this area, actually, there's instead of one major fault or fault zone taking up the differential motion between the plates, there's two faults that play about equal role in this area, and you can see them. They are, I mean, if you just go on to like a Google Earth or Google Maps, you can see this mountain range running just south of Port-au-Prince, and that's the fault. These two faults that are taking up the stresses are parallel faults, and each one takes up about half the stress of the relative motion between those major plates.
And why has this quake been so devastating? Is it because of the construction on the surface, or is it something in the quake itself?
Well, there's several reasons. Of the construction, of course, has a huge effect. I mean, the dominant building type there is unreinforced masonry. Mm. This is extremely susceptible to damage in earthquakes, as we've seen. The other factors are, of course, the size of the earthquake. Larger earthquakes cause more shaking and also longer shaking, and then also the proximity of the earthquake to that population center. This fault runs just south of that major metropolitan mm-hmm. area.
Port-au-Prince. And aftershocks, there have been a lot of them. Do you feel confident? Is there a sort of known window, some time at which they're finished, or could they keep going on?
You know, unfortunately, aftershocks can continue for months and years after a quake this large. They do decrease in frequency considerably, but people there should brace for more potentially damaging aftershocks.
Paul Earle with the U.S. Geological Survey in Golden, Colorado. Mr. Earle, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
I want to get down to West Palm Beach, Florida now, and Ralph Chariza. He's a Haitian journalist, political commentator on the Haitian radio service on WPBR in West Palm Beach. He and his staff have been working every connection to Haiti since the quake struck. Ralph, thank you for joining us. What's the latest you're hearing from Haiti, Ralph?
Well, we were able to talk to some people from Haiti, and basically they're standing outside. They're not able to go inside those homes because they still having aftershocks. The challenge is that even those who were willing to transfer of money to help those who are in Haiti, they're not able to do it because what we are being told is that the banks are not functioning because most of those buildings, they have collapsed. For the Haitian community here, there's a sense of frustration because a lot of people are trying to find out exactly what's going on and how are their families doing, and they're not able to get that information.
Ralph, what about food? What about water?
It's very rare in Haiti right now because people are not able to buy anything. So basically what we are being told is that you have bodies laying on the street and some people are just piling them up on the back of the truck. But they do not know exactly where to take them and what to do with them. So people are very anxious. They don't know what to do, and some people they are scared because they don't know exactly how long they're gonna see those aftershocks. And with respect to the Haitian government, there's no sense of direction. So we do not know exactly what is being planned and how will we be taken care of.
In this crisis aftermath, do you think Haitians, will people move, walk into Port-au-Prince or out of Port-au-Prince?
That's a million-dollar question. And I think right now people are dealing with the reality of that earthquake. People are not making decisions that far along. I know that my brother, when I talked to him earlier today, he was trying to see if he could get out of Port-au-Prince to go back in the countryside and stay there until they have a sense of what's gonna happen. But most people will be in a situation where they have to leave because the homes that they were living in, they are destroyed right now. So there's a lot of decisions that people will have to make, sometime down the line. But right now, they are dealing with the loss, and they are mourning loss. They are trying to figure out exactly what they have to deal with and how they can deal with it.
And which way to turn. Ralph Shariza, please stand by. Ophelia Dahl with Partners in Health with me in the studio. You've just been hearing from a colleague driving from central Haiti toward the city. What did she see along the way?
Along the way, they said that there were many rocks in the road, but actually the road was passable. As they got closer to Port-au-Prince, walls and houses were down, and obviously the destruction got worse the closer that you got to the center of the city. But they were able to get in and able to drop off the truckload of supplies to the log base, actually the UN, and then work with our colleagues there to establish a field hospital closer to the general hospital. She actually mentioned that while she was there, there were still aftershocks being felt. She was feeling them as she was in Port-au-Prince. But at the supplies, to compound things as well, Tom, it's cold there in the evenings.
How cold? We think of it as, tropical.
Yeah, it's actually the colder season, and at night it's getting colder, so there are urgent requests for tents, sleeping bags, sweaters, and as well as, flashlights.
On top of everything else. Ralph, stand by. Jacques, calling from Milton, Massachusetts. Jacques, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a radio program at WMBR at MIT and on Sundays. I had planned to be in Haiti today with my mom, so that plan is canceled.
I guess.
So those of people who want to get in touch with people in Haiti, if you have friends that have access to the Internet, I'm not a Skype person, but yesterday I was able to quickly download Skype and then talk to someone in Jacmel. And he
That's
gave
good.
Me the news about my mother-in-law, so which is she's fine. But I think that you ask what is next, and I think we should use the situations to learn lesson learned. Basically, I think the Secretary of State Hillary Clinton mentioned that Haiti was in the correct path with the United Nations, the government. I think that the failure of the government now to assist the population tells us probably there might be some concern and issue of that path, and one should reassess that. I think Partners in Health probably may, that person may make a comment on what I'm going to be saying. The path that Haiti was, what is a privatization path, one of the reasons why there's no assets right now in the country to help for the government to use is because people in the government historically have been stealing aid. Lately, in part of the new liberal approach was to basically privatize a lot of things. So the public transportation organization, which is called TPTC, which is in charge of rebuilding road and maintaining road, the way that right now things are done is that contracts are issued, and then basically and people are taking care of those contracts. So they don't have any heavy lifting equipment. It's that private individuals, they're renting trucks, etc., from whoever won the bidding. So I think this is, they're not only doing it for transportation's public work, they're also doing it for the healthcare. I think Partners in Health has a different approach, if I'm not mistaken. They, although they do things themselves, they're usually there to strengthen the public sector, what the government has.
Jacques, we can imagine there'll be a lot of examination of how things worked and didn't work in the aftermath. Of course, a lot of things not working so well, as you're saying before. Ralph Shariza, what about, it seems too early, on the other hand, the scale is so big. Do you expect political fallout from this, or is this just a humanitarian issue for the weeks, months ahead?
Right now, I think that should be the focus of our attention, the humanitarian crisis, because you have people laying dead on the street. I think everybody needs to focus on that. In terms of what we didn't have in place, we can have that discussion later on. We know that for a long time that the state lacked the resources to deal with emergency situations. We can have that discussion later on. And I do believe that I've heard a radio station from Port-au-Prince earlier today, and the finger pointing started. But I think right now people need to refrain from doing that, and deal, and everybody, every Haitian, everybody needs to come together so that we can deal with the loss of lives and try to see how we can limit the damage.
Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee, and Dawn. Hi, Dawn, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi, what do you know?
Well, I have some friends who are missionaries, and they're 5 miles west of Port-au-Prince, and I've been getting, I got like 3 emails through her husband,
because
mm-hmm. she's able to email out.
Are they okay?
Well, they are okay. They're seeing a lot of devastation, obviously. Their buildings are okay. They have like 40, from what I understand, there's about 40 Native women there that she works with. She's a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in her email, she's very desperate for supplies. They have gone through all they have. They run a feeding program. So they have some food there. Of course, they're turning around and using it. And they're just needing supplies. Like through the night, one of the emails was through the night, a little boy came in. His parents brought him. His arm had been cut off in the collapse of his home or hut building. And she put a shirt on it, and all she had left was duct tape. I mean, she's like to that point of using up what she has.
Mm.
And she was really just, and she said through the night, they're all staying out in the field that's near their compound
mm-hmm.
because they're all afraid to go in the buildings. But they, she said through the night, she said she was just sort of estimating, she figured there were thousands of people on their property just looking. And she, they delivered 3 babies last night.
Wow.
Out in the field.
It sounds absolutely overwhelming. Thousands on their property. I mean, a lost arm and duct tape, for heaven's sakes. We wish them well, Dawn. And again, at our website, onpointradio.org, many links where listeners, you can connect to send help to Haiti. Odalyn, Dawn, thank you for your call. Odalyn, Medford, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for this wonderful program. I have 3 sisters in Port-au-Prince that I'm trying to get in contact with, and I cannot. I understand that there is a house next to the house where they live that collapsed, and then somebody in there died. But for them, I'm not sure. For my husband, we found out that their house is standing still, but they still slept outside to avoid that an aftershock collapse the house on them. One of the things that I wanted to say is that one way that people over here can help is a way that Haitian people are very, very familiar with.
Yes.
Before we had landlines and cell phone, the way we used to communicate from one part of the country to another is via radio station. If, for example, there is a death in someone's family, someone will go to a radio station and say that if so-and-so is listening, I want to let you know that so-and-so died, or I want to let you know to call so-and-so.
Yeah, sort of like Alaska in the United States, where there's not, hasn't been so much communication. What about now? Is that working now, Odalyn? Do you know?
Well, that's one of the things that would work if, because of the fact that the only energy, the only electricity that there is over there is geared toward rescuing the people. So the only thing that would be left is for people to call on a radio station and to call radio station here and say that if so and so is looking for news from so and so to find out whether so and so is whether this family is in good shape.
Odalyn, do you think Haiti can recover from this? What does it mean to recover from a blow this heavy?
Well, I think we believe that together we can. So if we pull all our resources together and we do things the way we used to do things in the past when we were not so-called advanced, we could pull through. I mean, many countries in the world have gone through hurricane, yes. And they have survived. Mm. I mean, we can survive this too if we pull our resources together. Try to do things the old-fashioned way, the way we used to do things, and until all electricity is restored, until communication is restored, until everything else is restored, I think we might be able to hang on, because we held on from 1804 all through here, and it's right. Not without challenge.
1804, when Haiti got its independence, and what a road it's been. Odalin, thank you very much for your call. Ophelia Dahl with Partners in Health. Our time is short, but what a picture laid before us here. And you hear the determination, Odalin's voice, the confidence, and yet this is about as heavy a blow as a country can take.
This is without question, and yet the Haitians are about the most resilient people I can imagine. And your question about whether or not they can recover, yes, they can, but they're going to need the kind of concentrated support from all around the world that they haven't actually had up to now.
Ralph Cherizat at WPBR in Florida, thanks for being with us this hour. But Ralph, what's your word of encouragement to the people of Haiti today, Ralph?
Well, I would tell them that we can recover. We need to come together as one people to meet the challenge that we face. It's a severe blow, but we will recover, and we just have to work together. We have to learn to work together so that we can meet the challenge.
Ralph Cherizat, WPBR in West Palm Beach, thanks for joining us. Ophelia Dahl with Partners in Health. Listeners, thank you. Aid links at our website, onpointradio.org. This is On Point.